This is States of Listening, a podcast from Long Leash.
Episode 1, State of Receptivity with Anaïs Maviel.
My piece starts from formlessness. Soundscapes that fill our ears as we live our lives. That give flavor to each moment we experience. The light buzz and the cat's walk. The blowing wind and the plane growl. Time shifts that move a sound shape to another. The extraordinary alignment of polyrhythms between street work, breeze, pedestrian paths, crickets and birds' jams, and their amazing harmony. Sometimes these epiphanies happen in long cycles. Sometimes they are immediate. And they all speak to me as a language of interdependency between realms. Although some sounds have a certain opacity to my ear, because I don't understand their function, they still have a certain transparency as they intertwine with my reality and impact my way to be present to it. And ultimately, my body forms around these sounds to create language.
You just heard the amazing Anaïs Maviel, vocalist, percussionist, composer, and community facilitator, performing her vocal quartet B alongside vocalists Samrtha Kadambi, Gelsey Bell, and Megan Schubert. The speaking that you are hearing was from an interview that Anaïs did with Gelsey Bell about that same piece. I'm Paula Garcia, the violinist in my group Long Leash. Anaïs and I recently had a great conversation about listening, where she shared her thoughts about receptivity and ways of listening through the body, performer listening and audience listening, and listening as practicing. Here's our conversation. Okay, so I would love to learn a little bit about how this piece came together for you, because the piece has these long, long-running patterns that slowly unfold and develop into these, like, unbelievable, like, complex polyrhythmic textures with all of these different components that are, like, kind of rotating on their own axes, but also, like, really tightly fitting into everything around them. And there are also these really exciting, beautiful moments where a voice will break away with what feels like total spontaneity and freedom and unpredictability. And I would just love to learn a little bit about where that all came from.
So to begin with, I wrote this piece when I was staying at a friend's place in Harlem, and I was spending quite a bit of time on her rooftop. And it was very interesting listening experience up there. it's interesting to be high up to hear the sounds. And it was like 2 blocks away from Central Park. And so I could hear, you know, urban work, like construction. And I could hear birds and I could hear people and I could hear all kinds of rumbles, you know, like ventilation systems and things like that. And so, and I just loved how people speaking was totally like a solo. And, you know, certain things were just very repetitive. Birds, you know, can be very repetitive. So it was just this very like planned out, intricate polyrhythm of things, exactly as you described it. And then every once in a while you would hear someone make a joke, you know, like on top of it, and it was amazing, you know. It was just the best listening experience. And so I really wrote the piece exactly thinking about that, you know. That was, I mean, I literally, each of these parts are written kind of based on those things that I was hearing. But then I added, you know, my own perceptive lens of all of that and what it means to coexist, right? Mm. And to make space for singularities, you know, in the fabric of days and nights and, you know, in the fabric of time.
Yeah, I really love that. So in the spirit of making space for singularity, I also want to acknowledge that listening really can be so different for everyone, you know, for so many different reasons. And that kind of leads me to my next question for you, which is, what is listening to you or for you? What is listening?
Listening for me is really my first instrument as a musician. And also, I think it's my chosen tool as a human who interacts with others. Human-wise, I know that listening is one of my strong suits. And I use listening in order to relate to people. And I believe in the ethical power of listening. And I think that, you know, there's a lot to unpack in listening as far as an ethical value. And musically, because the voice is my first instrument, I've become very aware very early that the way I listen is completely entangled with the way that I create sound, that I produce sounds.
So before we talk today, you sent me this really interesting talk given by Rebecca Kleinberger, who's this incredible voice expert and researcher. And in it, she talks about this idea of outward, inward, and inner voices. So outward being the voice that others hear when we speak, the inward voice being the voice that we hear when we speak, and the inner voice being the voice that we hear when we think, or maybe when we read. So I'm really curious as to how you've imagined or maybe experienced this mapping onto listening, like inward versus outer listening, for instance, especially as a vocalist, like as an instrumentalist. I'm so curious. How do you listen differently when you're singing?
Well, that's a good question, because we have talked about the fact that you don't hear yourself the same way that you hear others because of your ears being so close to your mouth. Like, you know, when you speak to people, they're not like at the level of your mouth all the time. You have some space for resonance, which you maybe don't have when you make sound and hear yourself making sound. So the kind of listening is much more embodied kind of listening. It reminds me of how I'm trying to teach vocal technique to some students, to most of my students. I'm trying to get them to attune their sense of hearing to their physical sensation and not the other way around. That means that when you're producing a sound, if it feels really good, if you feel that your entire body is resonating as it should, right? As it is the case of when you play an instrument, you know, if you touch the instrument, you feel that the entire thing is vibrating. It has to be the same for your entire body. And for that kind of perception and awareness to be, your listening has to shift to that space, which is a completely internal. I mean, it's not completely internal because it is in relationship to the external space as well, because the sound that you're producing is also outside of your body. But you have to start from your own body, start from your own sensation. And so when you make the sound, you cannot have an external ear checking it out. You have to listen from within.
Yes, totally. I think that ability to bypass that external ear and really viscerally feel that internal listening, it's hard, especially if you've gotten used to not feeling, but it seems like crucial for survival, like spiritual survival, right? And not just for musicians, because like in so many aspects of our lives, once you reach that mirror stage, it feels like there's no going back. But I'm curious to hear how you work at this, how you get there. Like, where or when does it happen for you when you're making music?
I think it doesn't happen like in the moment of choosing sounds, you know. It doesn't happen when I improvise. It doesn't happen when I compose. I think it happens when I practice. And by practicing, I mean either listening or practicing my instrument. I think that listening to music is practicing. So, for example, let's say you're listening to something, you know, like I've been listening to this string quartet that is called Ainsi la Nuit of Dutilleux. And, you know, I'm listening to it and I'm like, yeah, like, this is so beautiful. You know, what about it is making me feel that way? Like, what is resonating with me? You know, it's not like I'm going to be checking out what school of harmony Dutilleux, blah, 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 you know. Actually, like an example that I'm experiencing more like as a composer directly is like I really love to listen to Messiaen, Olivier Messiaen. Like I've listened to him so much. And now I bought a harmony exercise book that he published, and also because he was a teacher, he also published like 7 volumes, beautiful book about ornithology and rhythm and color. I just bought the first volume. And it's full of theory, right? And somehow, like, I already write chords that I'm like, oh, yeah, this sounds like Messiaen. Although I haven't checked out the book, right? Because there's something that I've embedded that, you know, that came in me, like, through what we would call, like, oral transmission, which is through, you know, me listening deeply. And not necessarily analyzing what I'm listening, but just really receiving what the listening is making me feel like. And then as I write music, I'm not thinking, oh, I want to feel like that moment in Messiaen's piece. I'm just composing, you know, I'm not necessarily like taking my little book of feelings that I remember and try to reuse those feelings. There's just the feelings are there, you know, there are feelings that you share, you know, of, you know, you're having a conversation, you relate to what I'm saying, and then this comes to in another conversation that you're having with somebody else, you know? That's the beauty of listening and and sharing information, right? That's how music travels, really. So, you know, then I write this chord and I'm like, oh yeah, it does make me feel that feeling. And it reminds me of Messiaen. But I still haven't dived into his harmony book. But somehow, like, there's something that has infused in me that, you know, has to do with oral transmission. So I guess that's one part of practicing, which is listening, which has to do with oral transmission and not theoretical music language, but just receiving the sound and, like, you know, sorting out what is that feeling for you and then let it emerge back when it wants to emerge back. And then when I'm practicing as an instrumentalist, you know, I'm trying to get my instrument to be able to play everything so that whatever I feel then can come through. You know, then I'm like methodically being like, okay, so you play like this and play like that, you know, play this kind of scale, this kind of scale. And then try to feel good in that scale and see if actually it's possible that you completely naturally are singing that scale or not. You know, and if you're not naturally singing that scale, well, maybe that's not a good scale to practice, you know?
So I think there's this cultural tendency here to think of listening as this like somewhat hidden internal process, as if it's like an imperceptible act. But actually, the act of listening really is this perceivable thing, right? I mean, we all recognize the look of someone who's like not listening or someone who looks like they're really listening. But I'm curious to hear your thoughts on this like more subtle phenomenon of kind of sensing or feeling the way someone is listening. And of course, musicians experience this with their audiences all the time. So I wanted to ask you, what quality of listening do you tend to seek from your audience?
I am a very demanding performer, actually. One of my singularities, I think, as a performer is that I'm very demanding with people's listening. You know, like how in music, you know, it's like we're always kind of like somehow in entertainment. It's hard to make exactly the difference between music and entertainment. And I'm having mixed feelings about it. Like, you know, there's a part of me, like a more like snobby part of me that is like, no, like it's gotta be great art. It cannot entertain people. But then there's another part that is like, yes, like I want to entertain people. I want people to just like not being able to stay on their seat. I want people to stand and start dancing, you know, and I want people to laugh and hang out. And that's the kind of like concert I want to play. So, you know, there's really two parts in me and I'm still figuring out exactly what I want with entertainment. But I know that it happens a lot, you know, that I would play on a bill that makes me feel like it's people are expecting me to entertain them, you know, like whether it's like the quality of the listening before I go on stage, you know, if the set's before me, or, you know, if it's a bar, like if people are like loud in some way, or, you know, whatever expectations people have, you know, of course there's the racial stigma, you know, like people might be, you know, seeing like a Black woman go on stage and they're kind of like expecting some kind of like, you know, sensual, sexual something. Or, you know, maybe they expect, I don't know what they expect, you know, all kinds of things around entertainment, like big voice, drama. I don't know what they're expecting, but I know that just like the simple fact that I'm a Black woman going on stage somehow, like there's like, there is like entertainment that is kind of like, you know, attached to the expectation. And as a performer, I guess I'm really like, I need like real silence. Before I start playing. And I need people's full attention because I guess the kind of stuff I've been doing, at least I'm really thinking about solo performance right now, but I've been doing stuff that is so vulnerable, so sensitive and so subtle that if people are not fully focused, they're probably going to really mess with it energetically or not being able to get it. And I'm not going to be able to basically establish that relationship with them that I want to establish. So I need, you know, in order to do my thing, I need people to relate because my thing is about relation. And so in this way, I'm very demanding because I know that a lot of people show up at a concert and they don't necessarily want to be like fully focused all the time. They go and they somehow maybe are seeking entertainment in some kind of way, which means that they don't want to be asked for anything, which that means that they don't want to be active listeners. They want to be passive listeners. And I'm demanding to the extent that I want them to be active. And basically my thing cannot really happen if there's not this reciprocity in listening, which by the way really makes me think about, you know, kind of how the paradigm of feminine and masculine is really shifting nowadays. Like, yes, receptivity is like a huge quality and it's not passive. And it's never been, you know, but unfortunately, like in a patriarchal society, like we tend to perceive reception as passive. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, you know, part of this paradigm shift is like we start talking about listening as something that is actually like an activity. Mm-hmm. That's why, yeah, that's why there's a difference between hearing and listening.
I really feel that so strongly. And I think our awareness of that really shapes the kind of listening that we're capable of, right? So the feminist scholar Sara Ahmed has this really beautiful idea that she calls sweaty concepts, which I've actually found really useful for thinking about cultural attitudes toward listening. So I just want to take a second to talk through it, and I promise it connects back to this. So my understanding is that a sweaty concept pushes back against basically like disembodied theory, like an idea in a void with no connection to the body or bodily effort that produced it. So I believe Sara Ahmed is encouraging us to integrate the sweat, like the material conditions, the body, the effort, into the concept itself and how it's constructed and shared and analyzed. And I think this is helpful for understanding listening, especially in a culture that tends to render listening as a kind of disembodied, one-directional, maybe passive interaction with some sound object that's like out there, separate from ourselves, to be engaged with maybe on the terms of its perceived value. And it really limits the kind of listening that we're actually capable of. So maybe there's sweaty listening in the sense of being more connected to the physical, embodied act of listening. Like we were talking about earlier, listening is understanding those material conditions that produce the sounds you're engaging with and your ability to listen. But maybe there's also sweaty listening that's more effortful, more challenging than what some of us may have been conditioned to practice. So I'd love to ask, what are your thoughts on challenging listening?
There is a challenge in listening at many levels. Because basically embarking a relational journey with somebody you maybe don't know as you listen to them, and you embark a journey which is probably going to lead you to transformative experience because sound does that. It's one of this beautiful power of sound is to transform your perception, transform your experience, transform how you relate to the world. It's scary. You know, because also it goes very deep, you know, when you actually open yourself to hearing something. It can be a very profound epiphany or a profound breakthrough. And I believe that there's a huge potential for healing with sound. It takes courage to want to go there and to let oneself go there. And so to that extent, you know, I guess I am a demanding performer as I am kind of approaching healing as something that makes the person who's healing responsible for their own healing journey. You know, I am opening up space for you to actually deal with your own experience of listening, you know, which I am not the creator of. I am the master of ceremony, maybe. I'm holding space for it. But ultimately, I demand that you get in your own depth of listening and that you use the sound that I'm offering in order to experience whatever transformation is needed for you. And I think that is sweaty. Like it's, you know, it's you've got to be willing. You've got to be willing to be in those kind of spaces and to not feel safe because you're embarking in an unknown, invisible space of change. So all of that is so much challenge. And so listening is very challenging when it's done in full faith.
Thank you. So we've talked a lot about receptivity and reciprocity in the context of relational listening, like with others, with your environment. So as we head into the final stretch of this conversation, I wanted to ask you, what are your thoughts on inward listening? Like listening to the self, maybe, and especially within these different areas of your musical practice, like teaching, healing, composing, performing.
To me, performance and composition and teaching is a fabric. You know, I approach music in a holistic way, and so it's all part of the same practice for me. To me, it connects to helping students hear from within. When, you know, when I think of listening to the self, it's like, okay, so what are you hearing from within, you know, and what are the different layers of within you? Because there are many. You're a complex being, and there are many voices that you can hear inside, many ways to perceive your own sound, right? I think that there is a practice in distinguishing those voices and understanding which ones are helping you grow and which ones are preventing you from growing. And so I approach healing and teaching and performing as offering space and or tools for people to refine that perception of the inner voices and that perception of what are the voices that you're choosing to listen to.
That was Anaïs Maviel in conversation with violinist Paula Garcia.
The music you heard included selections from two compositions by Anaïs Maviel, B, performed by Anaïs, Amurtha Kadambi, Gelsey Bell, and Megan Schubert, and Glory to the Sun, performed by Anaïs and the Bismuth Quartet. You also heard a selection from Olivier Messiaen's 20 Regards sur l'Enfant Jésus, performed by Yvonne Loriot. And finally, you also heard some field recordings of ours, taken in Brooklyn, Queens, and Louisville, Kentucky.
States of Listening is produced by Longleash in Red Hook, Brooklyn. We would like to thank Music Academy of the West and our family of supporters for helping make this project possible. For more information about this podcast and other Longleash projects, you can find us at longleash.org.